We're going to be in the book of Genesis here in just a second. Genesis chapter 37. Jacob lived in the land where his father had stayed, in the land of Canaan. And this is the account of Jacob's family. Joseph, the young man of 17, was tending flocks with his brothers and the son of Bela and the son of Zepham and his father's wives, and he brought their father a bad report to them. Now Israel loved Joseph more than any of his other sons, and because he had been born to him in old age, he made an ornate robe for him. And when his brothers saw that his father loved him more than any of them, they hated him and could not speak a kind word to him. Joseph had a dream, and in that, when he was told it to his brothers, they hated him all the more. He said to them, "Listen to this dream I had. We were binding sheaves of grain out in the field, and when suddenly my sheaf stood and rose and stood upright, while your sheaves gathered around mine and bowed down to it." And his brothers said to him, "You intend to reign over us? Will you actually rule us?" And they hated him all the more because of his dream and what he'd said. Then he had another dream, and he told his brothers, "Listen, I had another dream. And this time the sun and the moon and the seven stars were bowing down to me." And when he told his father, as well as his brothers, his father rebuked him and said, "What is your dream that you had? Will your mother and I and your brothers actually come down and bow down before you?" And his brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept this matter in mind. His brothers had gone to graze their flocks in Shechem, and Israel said to Joseph, "As you know, your brothers are grazing their flocks in Shechem. Come, I am going to send you to them." "Very well," he replied. And he said to him, "Go and see if all is well with your brothers and flocks and bring them back to me." And then he sent him off the valley of Hebron. When Joseph arrived in Shechem, a man found him wandering in the field and asked, "What are you looking for?" He replied, "I'm looking for my brothers. Can you tell me where they're grazing their flocks?" "They moved on from here," the man answered. "I heard him say, 'Let's go to Dothan.'" So Joseph went with his brothers and found him in Dothan. But they saw him at a distance, and before he reached them, they plotted to kill him. "Here comes that dreamer," they said to each other. "Now let's kill him and throw him in one of these cisterns and say the ferocious animals devoured him. And we will see what comes of his dreams." When Reuben heard this, he tried to rescue him from the hands. "Let us not take his life, but shed any blood. Let us throw him in the cistern in the wilderness, but do not lay hand on him." Reuben said this to rescue him from them and take him back to his father. So when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe and ornate robe that he was wearing, and they took him and threw him in the cistern. The cistern was empty and there was no water. They sat down at their meal and they looked and saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Galilee. Then the camels were loaded with spices and balm and myrrh, and they're on the way down to Egypt. Judah said to his brothers, "What will we gain if we kill our brother and cover up with blood? Come, let's sell him to Ishmaelites and not lay our hands on him." After he and his brothers in his own flesh and his brothers agreed. So the Midianite merchants came, the brothers pulled up Joseph out of the cistern and sold him into slavery for 20 shekels of silver, the Ishmaelites who took him to Egypt. Now the rest of the story I'm going to leave you to read for a little bit later. The kids have studied this the whole while. Brother sold him into slavery. That's some brotherly love there. See, our children have spent a week learning about the life of Joseph recorded in the Bible at near their vacation Bible school. And if we're honest, it is only fair that you spend a little time with them too. So today we're going to do that. In some ways, it's rather amazing that Joseph, the son of Jacob, ever amounted to anything. It was obvious to his 10 older half-brothers that Joseph was daddy's favorite. Now, years ago, there was a TV show called The Honeymooners. Jackie Gleason was a star, and Art Carney played his best friend and neighbor, Ed Norton. Anybody remember that show? Ed was a happy-go-lucky, fairly slow-thinking worker in the sewer systems of the city. And Ed once summed up his philosophy of life in these words. Now remember, he worked in the sewer system. "When the tides of life turn against you and the current upsets your boat, Don't waste tears on what might have been. Just lie on your back and float. This morning, I want to talk to you about someone who repeatedly saw the tides of life turn against him, whose boat was upset more than once. Someone whose difficulties would have crippled the faith of a weaker person. But he didn't sink. He didn't even float. He rose above the waves of adversity, and he overcame his difficulties because of his philosophy of life. It was nobler than Ed Norton's. Who was he? His name was Joseph. As I said earlier, it is, in some ways, it's rather amazing that Joseph, the son of Jacob, ever amounted to anything. His father, Jacob, had two wives and two concubines, and he fathered 12 sons and an unknown number of daughters. Joseph had 10 older brothers and one full brother younger than him. His mother, Rachel, who was Jacob's favorite wife, had died a few years before giving birth to the younger brother, Benjamin. And because Joseph was Rachel's first child and had been born of Jacob's old age, it was obvious to his 10 older half-brothers that Joseph was daddy's favorite. You ever been that way in a family where you got a favorite? Yep, they knew it, all knew it. And because Joseph was Jacob's, this favoritism, let's just word it this way, became painfully obvious in their eyes when Jacob gave Joseph a very fancy coat of many colors. We sometimes talk about sibling, whatever word, you'll get it right, rivalry and dysfunctional families. Well, it is clear here that the half-brothers were absolutely hostile to Joseph. Genesis chapter 37, verse 4 says, "And his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all the other brothers. And they hated him and could not speak to him on friendly terms." Joseph had another problem. Not only was he his father's favorite, but let me be bold here. It appears that he's a rather naive 17-year-old teenager. Naive and not realizing how much his half-brothers hated him. Consider the two dreams Joseph had. In Genesis chapter 37, verses 7 and 8, he told his half-brothers they were binding sheaves of grain in the field, and suddenly his sheaf rose up, stood up, and all your sheep gathered around me and bowed down. His brothers said to him, "Do you intend to reign over us? Will you actually rule us?" They hated him, all the more because of his dream that he had told them. Maybe he should have kept his mouth shut, but he told them. And then in verse 9, he had another dream. And this time about the sun and the moon and the 11 stars. And this time the hostility was so evident that his father Jacob felt it necessary to rebuke Joseph. Now, if you've studied the life of Joseph, you know that these dreams were prophetic. The dreams came from God, and they showed what God was planning to do in Joseph's life. But the fact that Joseph thought his brothers would be excited about these dreams shows us just how sheltered and naive Joseph really was. Does that make sense? Sometimes the best thing is not said when you say something, right? Now, the rest of the story is familiar with. The older brothers were tending their flocks at some distance away from home, and Jacob had not heard anything from them. So Jacob sent Joseph to see them. And of course, Joseph wore his coat of many colors for the trip. Now, I wonder how you would have felt if you're one of Joseph's brothers and you saw him wearing that coat. It isn't like they went down to the store and bought it. It was handmade, right? Well, when they saw him coming in the coat of many colors, it was like a red flag waving in their faces. And they plotted against Joseph. Most of them wanted to kill him. But Reuben, the oldest brother, suggested instead of killing him, they'd throw him in a deep cistern, leave him there to die. That way they wouldn't be shedding his blood. And verse 22 says that Reuben said this in order to rescue them from him and take him back to his father. So when Joseph got to their camp, they seized him and stripped off his coat of many colors and threw him in a cistern. But while they're eating, they saw a slave caravan pressing on his way to Egypt. Let's save us some guilt, right? They had this bright idea. Judah and another brother had a bright idea. Let's sell him to these people. Save us of the guilt of his murder, and we even make a little money on the side. Verse 28 says they pulled him up out of the cistern and sold him for 20 shekels of silver to the Ishmaelites who took him to Egypt. Wow, how quickly things went wrong and can go wrong. One moment Joseph is the pampered son of a prosperous farmer and a herdsman with bright hopes and a happy future. And the next moment he's a slave. They took Joseph to Egypt. One reason we remember Joseph is the fact that his story is so relevant today. We've all experienced things going wrong in school, at work, in marriage, in our health, and in our hopes. Joseph lost his fancy coat, his pampered position, and his freedom. So when things go wrong, Joseph is a good example to consider. One thing we learn from Joseph when things go wrong is we may or may not be responsible. Sometimes we are, sometimes we aren't. In one way, Joseph was. In another way, he wasn't. I'll make sense of this. The cause of his trouble and the hatred of his brothers was fanned by two flames. One was the lack of his sensitivity to the feelings of his older brothers. And the other was the unmistakable and unconcealed favoritism of his father. Now you can make a good case for the fact that the first trouble was caused by the second. If Jacob had showed more sensitivity in dealing equally with all his children, as every father should, Joseph would never have supposed he was anything more than a little brother of the big boys. But be that what it may, the story suggests that when things go wrong, we may or may not be responsible. Sometimes we are. Whenever our difficulty arises from a condition which is the consequences of our own choice, we are responsible. I'm going to get in trouble in this example, but bear with me. A person falls in love. They idealize their sweetheart. They ignore and downplay their faults. We say that love is blind. Well, yeah. But it's often a self-induced blindness where they can convince themselves that they will change once they're married. You ever heard that story? They propose, and they suppose that the life of this person will be blissful, so they get married. And gradually, or sometimes suddenly, The romance fades, and they find life is not like what they thought it should be. The person is not about to change, and when things go wrong, it is sad to say, but in the real sense, you're responsible because you thought you could change the person who isn't going to change. It was they and no one else who said yes. Now, do you hear that again? It was they and no one else who said yes. And that's why God gives us guidelines about friendship and marriage. I'll be very honest about this. He wants us to make the right choices. And when we ignore him, we ignore them to our own dismay. But now, sometimes we're not responsible. Hear me out. We work really hard and we save for our old age and inflation cuts into our savings in half and we study hard and we earn a degree or we work hours after hours, right? And we get a good job and promotions come and the future looks really bright, but the economy changes like it does every so many years, right? And our job is gone and we find ourselves having to start all over again. Been there, done that. You all remember the couple of stock market took a dive, right? Makes you upset. Jeremiah 31, verse 29 says, this is a tough sermon when you hear this one. The fathers eat sour grapes and the children's teeth are on edge. You ever been there where you're just going through that in your life? Yeah, it's a tough thing to hear. Now hear this out. Our human tendency is to evade responsibility. But it is true that sometimes when things go wrong, we are not responsible. So when things go wrong, we may or may not be responsible for the case. But if we are responsible for the result, and the result often depends on how we meet the situation. Now, I personally wish I knew what went on in Joseph's mind as he was being taken down as a slave down to Egypt. No, think about that. Your brothers just sold you into slavery. He could have reacted very bitterly towards God. He could have said, "So this is the way you run things. What have I done to deserve this? I was trying to do what my father told me to do. I was looking for my brothers to report back home. I was doing my duty, and this is the result. God, I'm through with you," he could have said. "I've always tried to follow you, your rules, and do what is right, but look what it has gotten me." You ever heard that argument from somebody? I've heard that argument more than once. And they go their own way, and God no longer has any place in their lives. And they lose out on so much. But there are others who say, "I may not be responsible for when things go wrong, but I am responsible for what I do about it." So they meet the situation not with bitterness or cowardice, but with courage and determination. Or I would throw in to make... understand me, stubbornness. Any of you stubborn? You can add that line in there if you want to add it in. And that's what Joseph did. Even as a slave, he soon received honors and responsibility. Now, if you read the story, and the kids are all gone, Potiphar's wife tried to entice him into sin. She thought he was cute, right? So what did Joseph do? He steadfastly refused to defile himself and sin against God. And things went really wrong. Because he did the right thing, he was lied about by this temptress, arrested and imprisoned. While doing what was right the first time, he was sold into slavery. And now he's being put into prison for doing what is right. Why should he remain faithful to God? Can't you just hear him talking about this in prison to himself? If we're honest, yeah, I can hear it in his mind. You might be saying, I may not be responsible for what has happened, but I am responsible for what I do about it. That's my answer. He refused to become bitter and blame God. Instead, he met his trials with courage and determination to keep doing what was right. So finally, when the time came, he was ready to fulfill his role in history that God had prepared for him to do. Now, for you and me sitting here today, allow me to say this next thing that we can pull from our scriptures today very clearly and precisely. The results of your challenge may be better than you ever dreamed possible, or we ever dreamed possible. You can put either word in there. This third thing that we can learn from, there's a third thing we're going to learn from Joseph today. Kids got all of this, but you're just getting it quick. The first thing we learned is when things go wrong, we may or may not be responsible. The second thing we learned is that we are responsible for what we do about it. Now, here's the third. With God's help, the result can be better than we ever dreamed possible. For example, Joseph's predicament turned into tremendous personal testimony, tremendous personal blessing. He ultimately became the prime minister of Egypt. His power was directly related to his so-called bad luck. He was number two man in all of Egypt. He died number two man in all of Egypt. If he had never been sold into slavery, he had never met the lady who tempted him. He had never met his wife. He had never been put in prison. He had never been in prison. He had never met Pharaoh's baker. He had never been asked to interpret the Pharaoh's dreams. If he never interpreted Pharaoh's dreams, he had never been made prime minister of Egypt. You need to read this story. And I got a surprise for you at the end of the sermon about this. No. You got to hear the whole thing out. See, sometimes success is nothing more than failure turned inside out. And no one needs to be defeated, because out of every situation that he or she emerges, you can emerge a better person. Every challenge, you can emerge better. If he or she actually has the will to do it. If you have the will. Someone said, I love this, if life gives you lemon, make lemonade. It's true. I like lemonade. Now it sounds way too simple. But might be saying, Pastor, you don't understand. Everything's going wrong. You just can't do that. Think about this. An oyster takes a grain of sand in, which irritates it, and tries to get rid of it. And when it cannot, it takes that grain of sand and makes a pearl. Now, Thomas Edison, when he was a boy, received a blow to his ear that made him deaf. He later said that his deafness kept out distractions and helped him concentrate, so the ability to concentrate was largely responsible to his success with all his experiments. Go look up history. He was deaf. He could hear some sounds, very little. Now, in one of George MacDonald's books, he tells of a woman who was experiencing sudden sorrow. And she wished she had never been made. And she complained bitterly. You ever know that person who complained? To which her friend replies, "My dear, you're not made yet. You're only being made, and that's part of the maker's process. The challenges we go through are part of the process." What happens to us is never the most important thing. The most important thing is how we react. Joseph teaches us that even the worst difficulties can produce good results. Now, the story doesn't end with Joseph becoming prime minister. Because he's elevated to a high position, he's able not only to save the people of Egypt, but also his brothers and their families and even his elderly father. The famine in Palestine drove his family to Egypt in search of food. And Joseph, through his influence, provided homes and land for them. They ended up putting in the land of Goshen, and that's actually in the Delta, the most profitable land, the most wonderful land. They were in the Delta. We've actually found their homes. We can show you where they lived. And Joseph, through his influence, provided all that. When things go wrong, we often have a chance to help not only ourselves, but to render service to others too. A man was in an automobile accident, and the surgeon told him he could save one eye, but the other eye would have to be removed and a glass eye inserted. He's laying in the emergency room hearing all this, right? They're being very honest with him, and it's a terrible moment for him. Finally, this man smiled and said, "All right, but you have to put in a glass eye, and I want a twinkle in it." No, I mean, do you know people like that? You see what life did to them, and what they've done with their life. They've taken a lemon and made lemonade. When something goes wrong, we may or may not be responsible for the cause, but we are responsible for the result. Meeting the situation with determination and courage, the result can be good. But most importantly, our courage and determination can feed on the assurance that God is our friend and is always standing by to help. Do you remember the dramatic scene in the last chapter of Genesis? Joseph brought his family to live in Egypt, and the brothers who sold him into slavery were now completely in his power. They stand before him, completely in his power. And finally, their father dies. Jacob dies. And after his death, his brothers are really afraid. Fearing the worst, they throw themselves down before Joseph and beg his forgiveness. Joseph answered, "Do not be afraid. You intended to harm me, but God intended for good, to accomplish what is being done and saving of many lives." Those words are Genesis chapter 50, verse 20, if you want to read it. What an example Joseph sets for us today, to believe that when things go wrong, it's not God's doing, but man's misdoing. To believe that when things go wrong, there's a loving God who desires the very best for us. To believe that when things go wrong, and despite what others do, God can bring good out of the evil that has been done. To believe that when things go wrong, that God still loves us and has a purpose and wants to accomplish it in our lives. Now, I'm going to show you some pictures. Now, many of you have seen these pictures before, but we've got people who've been here and never seen these pictures. They're visitors or they're... This is a statue of Joseph that we've uncovered in Egypt. Now, it's busted. This is out of his Egyptian tomb. If you'll notice, this coat here has colors and stripes. He wore a coat of many colors in his entire service. He did not wear a standard cover in the Egyptian covers. He looked totally Egyptian except for his coat of many colors. And to his dying day, he wore a coat of many colors. This is from the tomb in Egypt. Next slide. Now, so you've got the picture of his head, the picture of his shoulder showing the colors, but this is a 3D rendering of the statue. Now, this statue is important because it was in his Egyptian tomb. We know where his Egyptian tomb is, and we know where his Palestine tomb is. You can get on a plane right now and go see his tomb in either country. He is an actual figure. I can prove to you by archaeology and by Egyptian hieroglyphics he lived. Next slide, please. This is his tomb in Palestine. Now, it's just been raided and robbed and all the curtains have been tore off. Next slide. This is the outside of the tomb. Now, when you see the next picture, you'll be shocked. Next picture. That's what they found it like. This was his tomb before they built up all around. Now, next picture. This is his, how he looked, a 3D rendering of his looking in Egypt. We can take you, and I can show you lots of pictures. The kids all saw the pictures of the hieroglyphics of Joseph's name carved in stone on the Egyptian temples. It said he was a sheep herder. He came from the herder families that he settled. He was number two. His name is carved in stone in the history of Egypt. It also says that he was number two in all of Egypt. He was not an Egyptian. Just like the Bible says, I can take a non-believing person and take him, show him all the pictures. There's like another 50 I can just show you just off the hieroglyphics. Joseph lived. I can prove it by archaeology and history. He did what the Bible said he did. There was a famine. It's also recorded in Midian, in Egypt, in Somalia, in all over the world. 7 years of famine. Just like the Bible said. 7 years of plenty, 7 years of famine. It's one of the stories of the Bible that we can say, okay, here. We can prove it. The world hates when you can prove the Bible. And I love archaeology. If you're home folks, you know I love showing it. And yes, you're seeing the pictures again if you're home folks, but someone here hasn't seen the pictures. It's a provable fact. He lived, he died, just like the Bible said, he was number two. It's a provable fact. You can go see that that's when the Israelites came. That's recorded in their history and their logs. Then they had to stay there 400 years to the day. And they left. They came in just a small group and they left a massive group because where the land he gave them. What God did is take the most terrible thing and do the best thing for the Israelites. Sometimes you go through troubles. Yesterday, I got in my car and I drove to the same day, you know, walk-in clinic. I was like, okay, did I mess up my hip? If you don't know, if you're a visitor, I got a new hip. And I'm like, I'm hurting like mad. And I'm like, okay, did I mess it up? I better not have messed it up. I'll never hear the end of it from the church if I messed it up. Right? I did not. They've x-rayed it. It's still perfect. Okay, it might be hurting, but it ain't because I did something. It just happened. Because they stretch all that. That's at least I'm going to claim that fact, right? But I've got to admit, it was not a fun drive when you're driving there and you're waiting to see if you messed up or not messed up, right? You know, you've been there. You had to go see if you messed up or not messed up, right? But life don't stop. We just keep on moving. That's what your kids learned this week. Now, they're downstairs having a blast. They're going to come up full of energy. They're going to come up running and moving because Brian don't know how to do anything else to keep them moving, right? They spent a whole week getting wet every night. Oh, gosh, did they get wet? Am I telling the truth? They got wet. They also had a blast. That's what matters. They learned about God. And they learned the same thing. It isn't what life does to you, it's how you handle it. They learned that this man was an historic figure that they can go see the tombs. They also learned that he overcame it all. Not by what the world did, but by what God gave him. That's what the answer from Joseph is. It's a great lesson, tough lesson. Now we need to close in prayer. Then if you're busy, what will happen is we'll have a final song. Then we have a few cookies sitting in the coffee bar, or you can have some coffee and enjoy that. But we're going to have a quick prayer, and then you'll be dismissed after the song. Let's close in prayer. Our Heavenly Father, we thank you for the message of Joseph. We thank you for the message of our children. We thank you for the blessings and the guidance that you give us from your word. Help us to realize that we are responsible for what we do, not what the world does to us. You've called us for a purpose. Even when we're going through the worst of life, there is a purpose. Now guide us and direct us in what we do for you. In your Son's most precious name we pray. Amen.